Hey folks, this is your man in Amsterdam, Bram Sarkowski. Get ready for the Social Spitball Show on blogtalkradio.com with your co-host Barbara D, right after a word from our kind sponsor. Do you appreciate listening to the Social Spitball Show? Well, your man in Amsterdam, your host, Bram Sarkowski, and co-host Barbara D, appreciate the indispensable support of Barry Sensa of Facebook, Robin Conrad of the Democratic 2014 and 2016 Change Campaign of Facebook, and Crystal Stevens, the Liberal Kitty. You can find all three, and us, and get to know your candidates and guests. Learn about current issues, and listen to exciting podcasts, all in one place. KnowYourCandidates.Weebly.com. That's KnowYourCandidates.Weebly.com. Weebly.com. Visit the link. Enjoy the content. Oh, and while you're there, show some love. Donate under contact. Thanks for listening.
This is Bram Sarkowski of the Social Spitball Show. Barbara D and I want you to run for office. We want you to win. That's why we encourage you to contact Bold Blue Media today. Call 888-978-1448, email info@boldbluemedia.com, or visit boldbluemedia.com on the web. Thanks for listening. Hey folks, it's your man in Amsterdam, Bram Sarkowski here. Barbara D and I are so honored and excited to call Janice Covington Allison an official friend of the Social Spitball Show with her appearance on Sunday, April 12th, 2015. Janice is a veteran of this great nation, a democratic and equality activist who most recently blazed a trail for fellow members of the transgender community by running for chairwoman of the North Carolina Democratic Party. Janice is a wonderful woman with a loving heart for all. As allies, we can stand up for transgender rights, but there's no way we can know what it's like to be a member of the trans or transgender community. We at the Social Spitball Show are happy to share a phone number and website connected to those who do know what it's like, members of the transgender community themselves. The Trans Lifeline is a free hotline for transgender people experiencing a crisis. This includes people who may be struggling with their gender identity and are not sure if they are transgender. This next part may seem counterintuitive, but to me it's actually very perfect and very true. The Trans Lifeline urges, if you are not sure if you should call or not, then please call us. In the United States, call 877-565-8860. That's 877-565-8860. In Canada, you can call 877-330-6366. That's 877-330-6366. You can also find them on the web at www.translifeline.org. All lives matter. You are not alone. Trans Lifeline is there for you. Please call. Thanks for listening.
What do you get when you subscribe to Bold Blue Magazine? How about one convenient place to keep up with state and local Democratic politics, and a place to get a local take on national issues. Plus, interesting and thought-provoking entertainment from around the world. But that's not all. When you subscribe to Bold Blue Magazine, you're helping to elect state and local Democratic candidates. And you're helping to advance state and local progressive causes. And that helps make a difference in the lives of real people in our communities. Because every dollar of your subscription allows us at Bold Blue Media to keep costs for candidate training and services ridiculously low, so that every Democrat who wants to run for office and make a difference can. Choose your subscription level and let's get to work building something great together. Subscribe today.
Subscribe today. Visit boldbluemedia.com/subscribe or call 888-978-1448. Thanks for listening. Let people vote. It's a simple yet powerful concept and sentiment that people have fought and died for. It's a sentiment shared by the civic organizations such as the League of Women Voters, the ACLU, the Southern Poverty Law Center, and the NAACP. Hey folks, this is your man in Amsterdam, Bram Sarkowski. Let People Vote brought Barbara D. and I together on December 1st, 2013 to challenge the actions of a Tea Party member of our local Board of Elections. That partnership formed was PETV, P people for the ethical treatment of voters. As PetV, we're fighting for your voting rights, not just our own. If you believe like we do that all should have an equal voice in the democratic process, then show it. Visit our online store on Facebook by visiting facebook.com, PETVORG. That's facebook.com, Papa Echo Tango Victor, Oscar Romeo Golf. Then click on the products tab to purchase your buttons and stickers. Let your voice be heard. Show the world you agree to let people vote. Thanks for listening.
Social Spitball Show with your host Bram Sarkowski. This is your forum to discuss politics, religion, democracy, and sometimes even music, sports, and culture. Please join Bram and your co-host Barbara D. Let's get the conversation going.
All right. Good evening. This is your man in Amsterdam, Bram Sarkowski, with you again on another evening, not a Sunday evening like we usually do, or Thursday sometimes. It is Friday evening, and we are rebroadcasting a public hearing recorded on Friday, June 12th in Fayetteville, North Carolina, on the voter ID rules that will be implemented by the North Carolina Board of Elections starting next year. These hearings were coordinated by the North Carolina Board of Elections across the state to receive public input regarding the rules they will have to implement as directed by the Voter Information Verification Act, otherwise known as VIVA. The deadline to submit written input is June 30th, which is coming up next week. Your written statements can be sent to rules@ncsbe.gov, rules@ncsbe.gov, or gov, rules@ncsbe.gov, or to P.O. Box 27255, Raleigh, North Carolina 27611-7255. Again, that's P.O. Box 27255, Raleigh, North Carolina 27611-7255. And again, that's the North Carolina Board of Elections. They will be receiving written input until June 30th. So as long as you get it in by June 30th, they will consider your suggestions, your input on this very important matter about the voter ID rules, which are coming in 2016, beginning with our earlier presidential primary in March. So stay tuned for information about that later in the year. But as I said, tonight you'll be hearing the public hearing on voter ID rules that was recorded on Friday, June 12th in Fayetteville, North Carolina. Without further ado, I give you the public hearing from Fayetteville, North Carolina on Friday, June 12th.
Okay, good evening. It is 5 p.m. on Friday, June 12th. My name is George McHugh, and I am an attorney and rulemaking coordinator for the North Carolina State Board of Elections in Raleigh. Also in attendance, to my right, your left, is another colleague from the State Board of Elections staff, Jennifer Faulkner. She is on our voter outreach staff. On the other side is Joshua Lawson. He is an attorney and our public information officer. Before starting, I would like to note a couple housekeeping items. There are bathrooms located in the building. I believe both bathrooms are down through the hallways, and you can ask a county board member, some of the staff we have on hand, if you need vents there. The Board of Elections office is around the corner as well. I think they'll be closing up for the evening for their usual business hours. I'd like to extend a special thanks to Cumberland County Board of Elections, Terry Robertson, the director, hiding back here, peek in Terry, say hello, and I'd really like to thank Terry. We drove from Smoky Mountains this morning. We had a hearing way out in the western part of the state, in Silva, North Carolina, this morning, and Director Robertson was nice enough to have some sandwiches for us when we got here, so that's true hospitality, so thank you very much. We have at least one of the Cumberland County board members here, and thank you for with them along with everybody who's here tonight. The subject of this hearing tonight is five administrative rules proposed by the North Carolina State Board of Elections. The State Board of Elections engaged in rulemaking as required by Session Law 2013-381, also known as House Bill 589. This law places new photo identification requirements for in-person voting beginning in the year 2016. The next thing I will say is a very important note. Please do note that the purpose of this hearing tonight is to hear public comments on the proposed rules, not comment on the laws that make this rulemaking necessary. If you do need to familiarize yourself with those rules, we do have copies. Hopefully everybody was able to grab a copy on their way in. We should have plenty of copies for everybody here. Please do understand that the State Board of Elections is an administrative, nonpartisan, independent agency comprised of a bipartisan board. The General Assembly makes laws, and the job of the State Board of Elections is to implement the laws. And in this case, engage in rulemaking that the General Assembly determined is necessary to implement the laws. The State Board does not have authority to change laws. It can only work within the rulemaking authority granted to it by the General Assembly. For example, the law in House Bill 589 does define specifically the acceptable types of photo ID. Therefore, an example of something the State Board of Elections does not have control of would be to expand that list of what an acceptable photo ID would be. The purpose of this hearing tonight is to receive public comment from interested parties. It is not a question and answer session. That being said, a member of our voter outreach team, and as well as all of the staff members of the State Board of Elections, we are available with the materials that you should have seen as you came in, and information about how to obtain a photo ID at no cost from the Division of Motor Vehicles. If folks do need assistance with that, and we'd be happy to talk with anybody. If they do have any questions, you can certainly talk to Ms. Faulkner. If you have any opportunities for the voter outreach staff of the State Board of Elections to come visit groups, if you represent any groups or a member of any groups, where that might be helpful. Please note that any questions and answers we do provide, if you go ahead and talk to us afterwards, are not part of the public comment hearing that is going to be part of the record of receiving comments from you all. Again, we cannot answer questions as part of the actual hearing that's going to be on the record. And finally, I'll just note that it's very much appreciated if we can have an orderly, respectful hearing tonight. And I would ask that there's not applause or any noise from the crowd, positive or negative, while folks are speaking. That is the technical rulemaking process. All comments received at these public comment hearings, this being one of nine public comment hearings that our office is conducting across the state, will be received. Any of those comments received by our office by the end of the month, June 30th, will be considered by the State Board of Elections before it moves forward with its rulemaking process. Written comments can be emailed to an email address we should have up. We've got up here, rules@ncsbe.gov, or they can be mailed to the State Board of Elections office, and our mailing address should be on the letterhead of the document with the rules on them. Folks who wish to speak tonight on the subject matter of today's hearing are asked to sign up on a speakers list, which I've got first page right here. The speakers list is asking for name, contact information, and the folks are representing any other persons or organizations with their comments. folks who wish to speak rest to provide this information at the beginning. However, we would like if we will certainly check back, and if there are additional names on the sign-up sheet, we'll keep a sign-up sheet out front. So if anybody comes in late or any persons decide they would like to speak, we'll definitely check that sign-up sheet before we close the hearing tonight. When your name is called, please step up to the podium and provide your comments. Folks whose name appear on speakers' lists will be afforded an opportunity to speak at the hearing within a time limit, and this is where I need to do a little math to see to make sure we have enough time for everybody to speak. Right now, looks like we've got about 12, 13 speakers here. And so we've had some busier public comment hearings where we have had to limit the time a little bit more. At our hearings in Raleigh and a couple others, we had a pretty full house where we limited 2.5 minutes. I actually don't think with this number of speakers we should have to do that. And I should also mention that 2.5 minutes has been plenty for 90% of the speakers. Since we don't have a overwhelming number of speakers, I would ask that we'll have a 5-minute time limit, and if persons could work within that, we'd appreciate it. But certainly we want to give everybody the full opportunity to speak. I'm pretty confident based on how these hearings have gone that 5 minutes should be plenty. On the topic of time limits, to help guide persons with the time limit, Ms. Faulkner will raise a yellow flag when we're reaching 30 seconds left and a red flag when we reach that time limit. Although interested persons who attend this hearing are welcome to be heard, it's not necessary for comments to be re-delivered in spoken form if they've already been submitted in written form. Conversely, if you do decide to speak tonight, your comments are going to be transcribed. We have a court reporter here who is transcribing all of your comments. So verbal comments will be part of the record. They will be transcribed and part of the full record that the State Board of Elections considers before it moves forward with the rulemaking process. So moving on to the rules themselves. Here are the proposed rules that are the subject of this hearing. Again, copies of the rules are available out front. The rules are 08, North Carolina Administrative Code 17.0101, determination of reasonable resemblance of checking. Second is 17.0102, determination of reasonable resemblance by judges of election. 17.0103, identification required of curbside voters. 17.0104, opportunity to update name or address after reasonable resemblance is determined, and 17.0105, declaration of religious objection to photograph. Before we call the first speaker, please note that this public hearing is being recorded and transcribed. So, when you come forward to speak, if you do have an unusual, if you have a name that would be helpful to spell, I'm sure our reporter would appreciate that. And if you could speak clearly into the microphone, that would be appreciated as well, so we can get your comments down in written form for the transcript. We do have one microphone tonight, so what we're going to do is Mr. Lawson has graciously offered to bring the mic up to you while you provide comments. At the podium right up here, we do have a couple of recording devices up there. During your allotted time, you may speak about comments pertaining to any of the 5 proposed rules. Again, please do remember that this hearing is not the proper forum to make comments about the laws passed by the General Assembly, positive or negative. Thank you very much for that. With that, we will move on to our public comment part of this hearing. Our first speaker on the list is Sheila Cuffey.
Good evening. My name is Sheila Cuffee. That's C-U-F-F-E-E. Several areas of the new ID rules raise concern, one being the worst of the law. If an ID is rejected, the voter may cast a provisional ballot that won't count unless the voter presents a photo ID within a few days. This leads me back to those who are making the determination, the criteria for selecting election officials and election judges. Beyond the selections is the type of training that will be presented, as well as accountability and documentation of each determination. I wish to address training and accountability. It is imperative that a training curriculum encompass more than the use of the voter computer equipment and overview of the new rules. An in-depth training, especially for all who are making the determination of reasonable resemblance, should include the rules along with sensitivity fairness training. Election officials should be trained on how to recognize individuals and the differences that may appear in their ID photo. Biases should be addressed so that officials can perform their duties in fairness. Role-playing opportunities should be incorporated with varying scenarios to gauge if a potential official understands. With every change, there is the possibility of unintended consequences, an outcome not foreseen. There are three types of unintended consequences, the first being unexpected benefit, which is a positive benefit. The second, an unexpected drawback, which is a negative detriment occurring in addition to the desired effect of the policy. And perverse result, a backfire when the intended solution makes a problem worse. The latter two concern me. It is imperative that we capture the impact of determination as to reasonable resemblance through documentation and data collection. According to the law, each determination made by the precinct election judges will be documented on a form provided by the State Board of Elections, and that is in 08 NCAC 17.0102, paragraph E. As this form has not been drafted, I am submitting the attached form for consideration, which I've handed to the officials here. The form will contain more than the prescribed information listed in the rule. For statistical data, I propose demographics of all parties be captured, the person presenting to vote, and each judge. The form also includes the types of ID presented. The information from the form will then be put in a database to quantify the impact in each precinct, the state, and the impact on various groups of citizens. This will give us a snapshot of the intended and unintended consequences. More importantly, it affords us a means to monitor how election officials are carrying out their duties to the extent of abuse of powers and discriminatory actions. In such cases, the individual should be removed from their appointment. And again, I've included a sample of a form that I feel that could work for that, and that we can use this for capturing race, age of presenting person, the identification that was presented, and then the same information for the judges. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Ms. Buffy. Appreciate your comments. We'll definitely have that put that on the record. Our second speaker is Dorothy McNeil. And while she's coming up, if you want, we can probably just pass the mic back and forth. That might just work just as easy. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Good afternoon. My name is Dorothy McNeil. That's M-C-N-E-I-L. Prior to coming to the mic this evening, I had a lot to say. However, the previous speaker laid it out quite well. The only thing that I would like to add to what she said is that I am a chief judge. I am an election official, and I am a trainer of chief judges. And I find that this process when we have to determine if the person resembles the identification is going to be very time-consuming. And, of course, we want to do everything to the letter of the law. However, I do know on times when there is a large turnout for voters, this is something that is going to add additional time to the voting process, and it will sometimes, I'm sure, make people make decisions that maybe they shouldn't. And so I would really like for the election officials to be well-trained and able to make determinations of resemblance. And then when they're not able to make those determinations, be able to satisfy the voter with either the provisional ballot or an explanation as to why they do not resemble their photo ID. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. McKeel, and thank you very much for your service as an election official. One housekeeping note I forgot to mention at the beginning, I apologize. Just a reminder, folks could turn off their cell phones or silence those. And one other note, following up on that comment, if folks feel like their comments have already been addressed in the previous comment, you're certainly welcome to yield your time, but you're also welcome to provide as much comment and provide your comments as well. The third speaker is John Holt Kirkman. Thank you, Mr. Kirkman.
Good afternoon. My name is John Kirkman, and I'm the chair of the Lee County Democratic Party. I'm strongly opposed to the voter ID law because it will suppress the right to vote for many of our citizens. The acceptable methods for voters to prove their identity is simply too short. If photo IDs are going to be required, why not include student photo IDs? Why not accept photo IDs that are issued by any department of the state, county, or municipal governments? For example, I'm a volunteer for the Department of Corrections, and they have given me a photo ID, and I assure you I was vetted more for that than I was to get a driver's license. If a registered voter doesn't have a photo ID, why not accept a sworn statement from the person with their date of birth or social security number? Failing that, do not require a higher level of proof of ID for voters who are able to walk into the poll to vote than you do for disabled voters who vote curbside. In advance of this hearing today, I learned that several hundred registered voters in my home county, Lee County, do not have a North Carolina driver's license. If they don't have a valid passport or military or veterans card or a tribal enrollment card, they will not be able to vote under your rules. To get the free photo ID at the DMV, the voters must show two documents with their full name. One document must show the date of birth and one must show the address. The acceptable proof of a birth date is usually a certified birth certificate. The Lee County Register of Deeds office charges $10 for a certified birth certificate. According to your poorly publicized card that you're distributing to get our citizens ready for 2016 that requires a voter ID, you advise to obtain a free birth certificate or marriage certificate for the purpose of voting. Please contact your local Register of Deeds. The card goes on, however, to advise if you were born or married out of state, contact that state's vital records office to receive certified copies of the requested document. The voters most probably will have to pay for certified copies of the requested documents from another state. Sounds a lot like a poll tax to me.
Our next speaker, folks, we're not clapping for speakers. This is not a participation event. Our next speaker is John Cheskowski. I apologize.
Cheskowski.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. I would address the commission here that this is simple to we in Cumberland County really haven't had any problem. Terry Robertson is the director of the Board of Elections. James Baker has been the chairman of the Board of Elections for the past 2 years. We, on provisional ballots or recounts, we have not had any problems and don't anticipate problems. Now, if these some of these people come up and want to involve politics or political blowback, I want to make the statement now that if you just keep James Baker as the Board of Elections chair, then he is an assistant DA in this county who deals with people's lives every day and can make good judgments. So when we get the provisional ballots back from the judges out in the field who could not verify an ID, then we have the people in place by Terry Robertson and James Baker who can make good decisions on this. And the board and the State Board of Elections, I'm sure, does not want any political blowback from the media or legislature or anybody else. So let's just keep things running smoothly and keep James Baker in place as chairman. And Cumberland County will continue on as smoothly as we have run in the past. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Our next speaker is Lynn Walker.
Thank you, Ms. Walker. Thank you. And that's Danish, Lynn. It's L-I-N. I just want to say that I am a registered legal alien, and I cannot vote yet. I plan to become a citizen. But what concerns me is there is so much worry and concern about getting this right. We've been doing it in Europe as long as I can remember, and I'm an old lady. Literally, you know, you have to produce photo ID, something with your address on, and it's usually a current utility bill to prove that you are still at that address. And that's it. You know, and I do not understand why everybody is getting so uptight about it. I really don't. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Walker. Our next speaker is Jerry
We're in the ballpark. Good evening. My name is Jerry Reinhold. R-E-I-N-O-E-H-L. I'm a resident of Cumberland County, and I've also served on the Cumberland County supported the elections as an election assistant. Thank you for hosting this public forum to permit citizens' input into the proposed rules for implementation of the Voter Information Verification Act. I want to compliment the entire Cumberland County Board of Elections staff and Mr. James Baker, Chairman, Cumberland County Board of Elections, and the other board members for their leadership in preparing for the critical 2016 election cycle. I certainly hope that Mr. James Baker will be reappointed for an additional term of office. In my view, there's too much at stake to change the leadership at this critical time. The following are my recommended additions, deletions, and corrections to the draft rules. This may get a little technical. I've got a copy I'll give you. First, general document recommendation. Perform a global find and replace of the phrase, quote, he or she, end quote, for they. The reason, the use of gender is unnecessary where it's used. Number two, line 12, comment. Forms for individuals to make a declaration of religious objection to a photograph need to be available at the polling sites for individuals who did not make the declaration sooner in accordance with 08 NCAC 17.0105. polling site declaration will enable properly qualified individuals to cast a provisional ballot. Next item, line 35, add subparagraph 08 NCAC 17.0101, parens C, parens 3, parens I, birth date or date of birth. Next item, line 35, add subparagraph 08 NCAC 17.0101, parent C, parent 3, parent J, sex, period. The reason these two items are available in the voter registration record and are also included on many of the acceptable ID documents. These items should be considered by judges in verifying a voter's identity. See NCAC 17.0102, parent B, parent 1, that shows these terms as factors for a judge making a reasonable resemblance determination. The next item is line number 50, add subparagraph 08 NCAC 17.0101, parent C, parent 5. The identification form shall be in good physical condition with all surfaces intact as originally provided by the issuing government authority and shall not appear to have been altered, modified, or mutilated. The reason? The identification document is the critical component of the photo ID verification process. There must be a requirement for the integrity of the document or documents being used to determine a voter's identity. Next item, line 78, change parent C, parent 3, and C, parent 4, to read parent C, parent 3, through C-5. The reason is if the correction that I mentioned above was added, then it would need to be renumbered. Line number 90, delete in the light most favorable. The reason, there should not be any ambiguity in application of the law. Line 96, delete or by other persons. This language is too vague and could, depending upon the other persons providing input, create the conditions where other violations of the law could occur, just as with a requirement for judges to determine a potential voter's mental competency to vote. Thank you for I have additional changes that time will not permit reporting verbally. I will provide the team copies of all my recommended changes and notes. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Rangel. And on that note, I think we should have some opportunity for additional time, and given that you do have some technical changes, if we do have some additional time, we certainly can offer that to you, but we would also consider, given that you have paper versions, that to be sufficient as well, so thank you very much. Our next speaker is John A.F. Harry. Thank you, Mr. Harry.
Thank you for visiting a great part of the state of North Carolina. Cumberland County is a growing county. I'm from Hope County, or the fastest growing county in Hope County. And the issues that we're discussing today is very prevalent to us. I am a former candidate at state and local level. I was a past elected official. So what we're discussing today earmarks right down to the candidate. I would like to read real fast. Section Law 2013-381 mandates that the State Board of Election administers photo ID requirements in a manner that confirms a voter's identity as accurately as possible without restriction and construes all evidence in the light most favorable to the voter. In the past, the last past several years, we've seen a lot of discrepancies in identifying the present law. We're not the lawmakers, as you stated. We're the recipient of that law. We're here to look at how to administer it. The lady that spoke prior, I believe she was the second speaker from the Cumberland County Board of Elections. She hit it right on the head. If the judges and their staff are not properly trained in two areas, administrative, they can read it and interpret it and be a person, we should not have any problems through the 2016 election. The nitpicking has to stop within this state about voter ID. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment, sir. Our next speaker is Nancy Checker.
Checker,
my apologies.
That's okay.
Good to see you again, ma'am. I apologize. I botched that again.
Didn't have to correct you the other night.
That was,
that was 4 days ago,
yeah,
right?
Ma'am.
That was a long time ago. Good evening, everyone. I do want to thank the State Board of Elections for holding these regional, this is not just for Cumberland County, hearings. And I'm really happy to know that we have folks here from various counties. I've seen Lee, Hoke, I think Richmond, and so on. So that's a really great feeling. I do want to speak to the issue at hand, which has to do with the voter ID. Oh, I didn't say my name. It's Nancy Shacker, and I live in Cumberland County. Do you need my address?
No, that's fine, ma'am.
Okay. I want to say that I am here to support that there be recognition of name variations, that we have latitude when we're determining who is a person, who is a registered voter, and who is not. I can assure you that I can show you some pictures of me, fairly recent, that look very different. We do look different. Sometimes hair changes. Sometimes you have hair. Sometimes you don't have hair. Sometimes some people have hair on their faces, and other times they may not have hair on their faces. So those are things that need to go in as part of the training so that there's a reasonable recognition. There's reasonable recognition. I support the idea that the address on the ID is not important. The ID, the purpose of the ID is to determine if you are, in fact, the person you say you are. And I would remind people that when you sign your name to Board of Election documents, you are saying by your signature that if you are not who you say you are, that you are committing a felony. I support a range of IDs for curbside voters. For many reasons, I took someone to the polls last year who was unable to see, visually impaired. You know, she may not look like she did when she could see. She may wear dark glasses because she's blind. There are a number of things. So the range of IDs for curbside voters is important. I think that student IDs need to be accepted. We have a state university system in place. By not allowing student IDs to be acceptable, we are eliminating or reducing an entire population of young people who are our future. I know it's said a lot, but they are our future. And I remember my first time being involved in politics. I was quite young, maybe almost 18, and it's been a lifelong journey since then. And that's what happens with young people. So we need to make voting as accessible and as available to our citizens. I believe that voters without an ID should be able to sign a sworn statement, which I alluded to before. And they can give the last four digits of their Social Security number or their birth date that can match the voter roll. And, of course, they're under penalty of law if that is incorrect. I think we need more staff. And how to go about doing that, we've been working at Democracy NC, where I work, to get people to volunteer and to come in and work as poll workers and to be available, because we did experience long lines. Now, our Cumberland County has a good director, and they have worked on some issues here, But remember, these regional hearings are not just for our local board. There are many places, and we did a study and of 7,000 voters who were exit polling. And that study is available. It's through the University of North Carolina. And you will see that there were many, many problems, including problems here in Cumberland County, that voters had to face upon attempting to vote. I do support strong training of poll workers, and I support documenting judges who oppose voter ID to evaluate those persons who are making that determination for possible bias. Again, I want to be very thankful for the opportunity to speak on behalf of the citizens and our supporters. Thank you.
Thank you very much, ma'am. And I see we've got some people who are continuing to come in. We do have some seats up front. Folks would be more comfortable in the seat. We do have some chairs up front. Our ninth speaker is Clarissa Green. We'll just give a few minutes on this when folks are coming in, so make sure they can get situated. If Ms. Green is
I'm
in the room.
Way, sir.
Oh, okay.
On my way.
Oh, okay. Didn't know that. Good to see you. All right.
I just have to do this. I'm a proud Yankee. We pronounce her name Clarissa. The I is an E sound, so I just have to get that. Good evening, everybody. I have two comments. One is pro and anti. I realize you're probably going to do the photo ID, so this is my comment in reference to accepting student IDs. It is a privilege to vote at the age of 18. Many of our young first-time voters are either away in college, serving in the armed forces, and or working out of the state at least 6 months out of the year. These votes are valuable and need to be counted during all elections. We will lose too many votes if the student ID is not accepted as a valid form of ID for the process of voting. The message is clear. You may register to vote at age 18, but your college or university ID is not a substantial government document for the purpose of voting. Many students rely on the student ID in order to exercise their right to vote. This is clearly the wrong message to give our young citizens who are trying to enter the adult world responsibly. The colleges and universities are government institutions, and many of the forms that the students use for their education are based upon information that the student ID can show. So how can a few officials decide that this is not a valid document to use for voting? For example, they apply for loans, and you have to use some of the information that's on your ID. It was also taken from your graduation diploma. Getting back to my comment. North Carolina has not had major problems with voter fraud where the voter ID can be said to be a deciding factor to eliminate voter fraud. Photo ID is another method to prevent certain populations from being able to voice their opinions in the electoral process. It is important, therefore, to accept the college university issued student ID so that these valuable votes can be processed. My second comment. Support voters without IDs, sign sworn statements, and provide either birth certificate and or the last four digits of a Social Security number. Forcing all voters to provide photo identification is a covert discriminatory practice. The minority populations frequently do not have valid photo licenses. They usually do not have current valid licenses due to traffic violations. Frequently, the reasons for lost licenses are due to license revocations or suspensions. If they have not paid the fines, they will not have a license to present at the polls. So it would be challenging to exercise their right to vote. Sometimes college students delay applying for driver's licenses. Military IDs and passports, which can be very expensive, can present certain challenges to obtain without identifying documents for the voters. Many minorities do not have valid birth records, so presenting a birth certificate is not an option. One example, I belong to an organization. The female died when she was like 97. She was the person that I was assigned to. I remember her telling me recently after I came to North Carolina that she was told at 4 years old that, I'm sorry, when she was five, that she is 5 years old now. They did not issue birth certificates during her time. She was a minority, and that's a common practice during that time, and in some cases now, especially people not born in hospitals. Social Security cards, too, may be very difficult for this population to obtain. For the above reasons, it is important to accept sworn statements plus birth certificates and or other identifying documents from the voter who does not have photo ID. We cannot afford to deny any citizen the right to vote against discriminatory practices. This is America, and we are better than that. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Green.
Yes, sir.
Our next speaker is Deborah Stewart. Thank you, Ms. Stewart.
Hi, my name is Deborah Stewart, D-E-B-O-R-A-H, Stewart, S-T-E-W-A-R-T. People are caught in a catch-22. You need a birth certificate to get your ID. With the young lady that was here right before me, I wholeheartedly agreed with what she was stating about at some times when people were trying to get IDs, those birth certificates were not available. I'm going to use a couple of examples. The names have been changed to protect the innocent. Brenda Stewart, a retired state employee, learned that her old employee ID, which was issued by the state and included her photo, wouldn't meet North Carolina's voter ID law. She went to a motor vehicle office to obtain a valid photo ID. The agency asked her for a birth certificate, but she didn't have one and was denied her request for a new ID. Brenda Stewart, 93, has never had a birth certificate. She wasn't born in a hospital and was delivered by a midwife. In North Carolina in 1918, birth certificates, particularly for African Americans in the South, weren't regularly generated at that time. As a result, Brenda Stewart may not be able to vote this year for the first time in decades. Brenda Stewart was so mad, but she held her peace. And this was an obstacle that had stopped Brenda Stewart from voting. Excuse me. This practice affects some 30,000 people, according to voting rights advocates in this state. At age 96, Clifford Stewart, a disabled veteran, rarely leaves his home and votes by absentee ballot. He has a driver's license that expired a few years ago. Clifford Stewart asks the requirements for obtaining a new voter ID under the state's recently enacted voter ID law. The response Clifford Stewart received outlined the requirements that included a $28 fee, which angered Clifford Stewart because Clifford Stewart expected the ID to be free. And I think that's a shift, Clifford Stewart stated, if I can't vote. I feel like I was thrown out. Like Brenda Stewart, Clifford Stewart was denied his application for a new voter ID because Clifford Stewart and Brenda Stewart lacked birth certificates. This is not fair to the elderly. This is not fair to the poor. This is not fair to the young people ages 18 to 24. And actually, this law is not fair to anyone.
Thank you, Ms. Stewart. Our next speaker is Evanita Gonzalez.
Juanita.
Oh, Juanita.
That's okay. Bad handwriting. Gonzalez with a Z on the end. Okay. Thank you for letting us all speak here tonight. I do support a voter ID. I have been a candidate and an elected official in Cumberland County, and I think it's very important, having gone through elections, to know that every vote counts. Every vote is an honest vote. Everybody that is voting is the right person that is voting, because sometimes some of our elections have gotten down to close votes. So you want every vote to count, but you want it to be an honest vote. I also work at a big box store. I work at Lowe's. When you come in to do a return, you have to show an ID there. Last year when I had to get my driver's license, I sat in the DMV for 3 hours, and I sat and watched as everybody walked in, and the lady sitting at the door said, you have to have two forms of ID. Half the people had it, Half the people walked out, and they were back again within the hour. Nobody ever questioned it. Nobody quibbled about it. Nothing. Everybody was able to go get two forms of ID. And I think most of our students at the colleges do drive, so I don't think that's going to be a problem, that they're going to have driver's license. There may be a few, but I think we can work through that.
Excuse me, folks. Can we keep the audience quiet, please, and keep this respectful?
That's great.
Thank you.
Sorry. I also have been involved in elections where we have had candidates who had other people voting for them. We've had people from the state come down to investigate them. Marshall Tudor came down about 12 years ago to investigate one candidate, and because there were things going on where people were voting that shouldn't have been voting. But because of politics and knowing people in higher places, that was all hush-hush. But as a candidate, I know that goes on. It goes on in all elections. So I think it's important that we support that we do have the voter ID and that people have the voter ID. I just feel we're in the 21st century now, and I think we're all working together to try to make sure everybody has an ID. We don't want to discriminate against anybody. We want to be professional, and we want to be sensitive to everybody and get the ID, and I think we need to stick with that. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Our next speaker is Jimmy Buxton.
Thank you, Mr. Buxton.
Good evening. I'm Jimmy Buxton, president of the Fayetteville Branch NAACP here in Fayetteville. I have to concur with what the gentleman from Lee County stated. He stated most of the things that I wanted to say. I do have a couple concerns. One is the posters you have with the IDs listed on there. I don't think we may have a problem here in Cumberland County. However, as Ms. Shacker stated, you have several different counties, and there are smaller counties that will try to follow that particular chart by the T. My concern is retired military cards are blue, and it's not on there. But yet, still you say you can use military ID. You also have dependents whose IDs are kind of brownish. They're not on that particular chart. If someone wants to use that to stop somebody from voting, they can do so by saying it's not on that chart. So I think the chart needs to be updated. My other concern is the fact that if a person is handicapped and he's been voting in a precinct for all his life, and that precinct may have changed. And when he gets there, they tell him that he cannot fill out a provisional ballot because it will not be counted after 2016. I think this is wrong. It's been going on for years. Signature attestation has been in process for years, which, as Ms. Shacker stated, that it is a felony to sign your name and vote here in this state. And this is one of the reasons why the NAACP is totally against this new voter ID law, or suppression law, I call it. And this is how we feel about it. But if things were working right for all these years, and you didn't get that many people that was actually in a fraudulent way trying to vote, why do so now? Thank you.
Thank you for the comments, sir. We have one more speaker on our list, our initial list, and I did want to remind everybody here that I did mention at the beginning, we do have a list at the back for supplemental names, and looks like we've got a few names on here, so we will continue there. But just wanted to note for any persons who came in late, we definitely want to give everyone the opportunity to sign up for the speakers list to speak about the rules. And so we will continue with our last speaker on the first page. That is Ralph Stedding.
Sort of a previous speaker, number one speaker, covered what I had to say, so I yield my time.
Thank you, Mr. Stedding. I love that. Okay, we will move to our second page of speakers. This will be our 13th speaker, Roberto Wallo. Okay, thank you for letting me know that, Ms. Waddle. We'll get up here. And our next speaker, Kathy Pittman. Thank you, Ms. Pittman.
Hi, I am a citizen of Cumberland County. I've been here about 20, 25 years. I think this the voter ID is a common sense recommendation that we need to seriously look at. Of course, there's always going to be some initial problems in initiating something like this. And I think some people have brought up some good points about some of the exceptions that we should look at, especially for the elderly people and handicapped people. I did volunteer for the first time last year at my local precinct, and I think a lot of people there, because we had the signs up, were already expressing that it was a good idea. And I think the biggest problem we had in the precinct where I was is people were at the wrong precinct, and I don't know if this would help any, but if people know up front that they have to have an ID, hopefully they will check their address and the precinct before they get there, so maybe it will cut down on some of the confusion we had with turning a lot of people away because they were at the wrong precinct. In this day and age, with technology the way it is, it can be abused a lot, and a lot of security issues that are increasing in every walk of life. I think the voter ID is a very much needed, again, addressing some of the other concerns. One question I would have, would this be any way used to help eliminate the fraud between people that vote in different states, like, say, people that recently moved and stuff? I was just wondering if there's other applications where this could be used to cut down voter fraud when across state lines and things like that. I just thank you again for hearing all our input and going in the right direction. Thank you.
Thank you for the comments, ma'am. Next speaker, Tomasino Panel. Apologize if I mispronounced your name.
Thank you. Okay, good evening, everyone, to the panel. Let me first introduce myself. I am Tomasima Pinnell, spelled T-H-O-M-A-S-E-M-A, last name Pinnell, P-A-N-N-E-L-L. I come before you, and I will say I agree with our president of the Fayetteville branch of the NAACP, Mr. James Buxton, and I further agree with the comments that were made by Ms. Nancy Shakir, S-H-A-K-I-R, Shakir. I brought with me, and I will be very brief with you today, I am a 20-year veteran, and I'm very disappointed at what I am seeing, that supposed signs that I did identify voter identification. I am, again, a 20-year veteran, and I brought before me several IDs that are of myself. And if you look at them, and I guarantee you, you will be challenged. Because within my 5 years of retiring from the military, I have changed my image a few ways. One, just by age alone, just by the identification of my hairstyle. I may have a day I will have cosmetic makeup, and there are days I will not. So if I'm challenged by looking at my identification, for someone that does not know me, you will be challenged as well. So I brought before me, and I have no problem passing this information around. I just ask if you look at it, please do not copy my information because it is detrimental for those that agree, you know, fraud and identification. But what I brought with me is my passport. And I will pass that to you, sir, and if you can pass it to your left and your right. I brought with me my blue identification card for my retirement, again, and it is not posted on the North Carolina State ID. I brought before me my veteran's identification card. It is different as well. Then I brought with me my driver's license. And again, no, not just to the panel. Just to the panel, ma'am. Just to the panel. And again, I have provided my driver's license as well. And if you look at each one of those photos, again, you will see that my photo is different. And then I brought with me as well my children identification because they are dependents. I have one adult son with a dependent card, and again, that is not provided or that is not showing on the North Carolina State identification as a photo ID. So again, I will be brief, and I will just say I ask that you all search your hearts
and do what's right by the people, and the NAACP is for the people, by the people. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am, for your service.
You're welcome.
Our 15th speaker is Nia Taylor Clark.
My name is Nia Taylor Clark. I'm a student at Fayetteville State University and an intern with Democracy North Carolina. And I would like to speak about the voter ID laws that prevent college students from using their IDs. I believe it creates an extra hurdle for young voters. To me, what the legislation is essentially saying is that college students, out-of-state college students, even though we live here for the majority of the time, we don't have a say-so in the government in which we live. I am very disappointed and discouraged by the more than 30 states who have passed this law that disproportionately affect college students. Although these laws have tried to say that the measures detailed in the law prevent voter impersonation fraud, I would like to dismiss this argument and label it as nothing more than a scare tactic. This type of fraud targeted by voter ID laws is actually less common than getting struck by lightning, and this was done in a study. This was found in a study. The law treats college students like myself as children who aren't capable of meeting the same voting requirements as the other citizens that we live with. I believe that is wrong because we are adults and we have proven ourselves as such. This law will form a negative relationship between students such as myself and politics, which can be avoided by eliminating the voter ID law and gaining back our trust in our government. The law does not allow enough latitude and enough flexibility to be fair to everyone, and I do not agree with it.
Thank you for your comment. I'll just note again, we're reaching the end of a page of speakers, so we'll just check again, see if there have been any additional persons to sign up. This will be the last person on this page, though. Romaine Stanley.
Thank you, Romaine Stanley, Cumberland County, resident of Cumberland County. I wanted to also say that I was a past candidate for elections in Cumberland County, but I just wanted to first thank you, the board, for coming down here and holding these regional meetings. We definitely appreciate that, giving people a chance to voice their opinion on matters that deal with their personal lives. I just wanted to speak on a couple of points. First point that I would like to say was on the support of allowing voters to, without an ID, to sign a sworn statement and give the last four digits of their Social Security number and birth date to match the voter roll. The reason that I say this is it's a part of our constitutionality with our freedom of speech. It's also the reason why I say that is in the past year, I have grown my hair over 5 inches in length, and if it were not for 2 weeks ago, I shaved my face and even my closest of friends didn't know who I was in passing, and none of my IDs show that resemblance. So I definitely feel that that is something, giving your last digits of your Social Security number and your birth date should be something that should be supported. Not to mention, again, as one of the speakers said before, that voter fraud is a felony. If someone commits a crime, then you do your time. So I definitely support that. Definitely don't want anyone committing voter fraud. Another point is the acceptance of student photo IDs. I think one of the speakers was misinformed on the law for some of the schools or the acceptance of photo their driver's license. Freshmen, I've attended three colleges in my time, and none of those colleges allow freshman students to have driver's license IDs. They had to live on base, and they were not allowed to drive cars. So that is definitely something for freshman students, and they are of age.
Excuse me, folks. Please, no audience participation. Thank
right.
you.
And most of them are of age to vote, so I believe that you are definitely cutting out a great population of voters, and that is their constitutional right to vote. And the last thing would be supporting documenting which judges oppose, which voter IDs to evaluate for possible bias. I definitely believe that That is something that we should do in the age that we are in, with constant investigations, such as North Carolina currently being an investigation for state and government buildings not allowing voter registration or not doing to a certain amount. I believe that that is something that we should at least look at for the 2016 elections. And that is all I have. Thank you for your thank you for the time.
Thank you very much, sir. Again, I'll continue to note when we have what appears to be the last speaker before we review any for additional time. Andrew Bryant Jr. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Appreciate it. My name is Andrew Bryant Jr. I'm a lifelong resident of Fayetteville, North Carolina. I'm 61 years old. And when I hear people talk about situations where they say, look, if you need an ID to go on a plane, if you need an ID to buy something, those things are relevant, but they're not relevant. We were the only people that took 1965 to have a Voter Registration Act that gave us the opportunity to vote. And I was 11 years old then. And we turn around here in 2015 and having these same situations, these same problems. I have been a judge and voted, and I've never seen the kind of fraud people say that is existent. It does not exist. So what we're doing, we should be trying to enlarge the scope of people to participate in the process. But here we are in year 2015 trying to deny segments of people the opportunity to vote. Like I said, I'm 61 years old, and I never would have thought that I would have to come over and see this again. Because when I was 11 years old, we had the Civil Rights Act, the Voter Registration Act of 1965. And here we go again, and people died for that. I don't know nobody that died trying to get on a plane. I don't know nobody that went to Lowe's and said, I need two IDs in order to exchange a product. See, this is important. And for people to take this issue and try to act like it's not important and try to use these things to keep us from participating in the process, I think that's a travesty. And we have to address it as such. And so I think what we need to do as people, we need to be more inclusive. We need to find opportunities or ways of trying to enlarge the amount of people that participate in the process rather than trying to cut down the people that need to participate in the process. And you're talking about the fraud. If there were fraud, why people ain't in jail? Why people not in jail? Tell me why people not in jail. Excuse me. If they're committing crimes that you say that we're committing, all these people out here, then we need to have some issues to deal with this. And I just want us to understand, participate, that we're just cutting down on the amount of people that participate in the process, and we shouldn't be doing that. We should be opening it up. And I just want to thank you for your time. At least we're having a dialogue. And this dialogue should have been discussed even more among those who believe it and those who don't believe it. We need to have some changes. And I just want to thank you for your time.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for your time, sir. And please, no applause. Thank you for respecting that. That, I believe, should be our final speaker. I believe we just had one speaker who reached the five-minute limit. Mr. Reinhold, did you care to speak further, or would you like to simply use your
dialogue? Yeah, my comments.
Okay. Thank you very much, sir. What we're going to do now is I'm going to just provide some closing remarks, and then we've certainly got plenty of time where we're going to be available to talk, but we'll close out our segments that is on the on the record here. We'd like to thank all interested parties for the comments we did receive tonight. As stated at the beginning of the hearing, written comments can be received through June 30th. It will not be necessary to provide written comments if the point has been conveyed verbally at the hearing. Following the close of the public comment period, all comments will be considered by our board, the State Board of Elections, as it moves forward with its rulemaking procedure. If any folks do wish to provide written comment, we also do have some cards here that written comments can be made even after we close the record. And, of course, you can send it to the mailing address. If you'd like to hold on to your copies of these proposed rules, you certainly can. Or if you don't need to have those, you can certainly leave those at the table on your way out. We will certainly reuse those. We do have one more hearing.
And I did want to just make one note that was made as a suggestion at one of these last hearings. We certainly do appreciate that folks do have compassionate feelings here. And we talked to several people who serve as election officials. And we do encourage everyone who do have strong feelings to talk to your local county board of elections, whether it's Cumberland or wherever you're coming from. And you can certainly get involved. Elections offices are always looking for good people, and we want this law to be implemented fairly. So thank you very much for the comments we received tonight. We'll go off the record now. Thank you very much. You all have a good evening and safe travels home. Thank you.
Tonight you've heard the public hearing recorded on Friday, June 12th in Fayetteville, North Carolina, on the voter ID rules that will be implemented starting in 2016. These hearings were coordinated by the North Carolina Board of Elections across the state to receive public input regarding the rules they will have to implement as directed by the Voter Information Verification Act, or VIVA. The deadline to submit written input is June 30th. Your written statements can be sent to rules@ncsbe.gov. That's rules@NC as in North Carolina, SBE as in State Board of Elections, .gov or GOV. rules@ncsbe.gov. Or to P.O. Box 27255, Raleigh, North Carolina, 27611-7255. Again, that's P.O. Box 27255, Raleigh, North Carolina, 27611-7255. We appreciate you tuning in to this rebroadcast of the hearing in Fayetteville, North Carolina on Friday, June 12th. Thanks for listening.